5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed Toward Justice. This is our final episode of the entire year, and I'm here, as always, with my colleague, Colin Miller. Hey, Colin, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. We're about to start exam season here at the law school, so looking forward to wrapping up all the work we did here on the podcast and then getting to grading some exams.
And then do you get, like, a week off at least?
I am teaching what they call a winter semester class.
So you don't. That's a no.
It's a plea bargaining class. It is 5 days in December, and it's 3 hours per day for a week. So that'll be intense.
I bet you some of our listeners would love to have a Colin Miller class. You should set up on our Patreon, I don't know, some kind of a class or course or something in something, because our listeners love your legal lessons and legal theory, as you're known.
Yeah, it's interesting. For years at University of South Carolina School of Law, we have done a law school for journalists.
Oh.
We're covering crime and legal matters. And so, yeah, I wonder if our listeners would be interested in doing sort of a short course in the law where it's pitched towards people who are interested in this, but, don't have that background of having gone to law school.
I'll tell you this. Over the years, I've had lawyers straight up tell me over and over again, because when they hear kind of like the record that Undisclosed has, how many cases we've been able to help in a relatively short period of time, they're kind of shocked. And I've had a number of folks say to me, you guys, your team should write some kind of manual, like how to undo a conviction. Like, what is the Undisclosed model? How do you guys do this? What do you do? How do you attack convictions? And that's been like this little germ in the back of my head that I'm like, yeah, that'd be good. Even a how-to guide for citizens. Let's say the families of people mm-hmm. who are incarcerated and don't know what to do, where to start. We should think about this, Colin.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we just recorded an episode that's going to air in January, and it's about the Dennis Perry case.
Yeah.
Dennis Perry was convicted of this murder in Georgia in the 1980s, and he was confronted with the option after he was convicted of either face the death penalty or waive any right to appeal. Mm-hmm. And that was very early and Undisclosed, and the Georgia Innocence Project was saying, you probably don't want to take this case because he's waived his right to appeal. And ever since that point, and now, of course, he was released, and you'll hear about what's happened since then. My first thought in any case is always, okay, how beyond our reporting can this person get released from prison? And so I think that's a great question of, how do you attack these wrongful convictions? And variety of methods depending upon the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, and I think also when with Joey Watkins too, I think I remember when Susan brought the case, she was told, well, he's exhausted like everything, basically. We've seen this over and over again, and then yet managed to find in many of these cases ways to move forward. I don't think there's been a single case in which we haven't found something that could get the defendant back in court or get them some kind of relief. It's been a learning experience for me. I don't come from this background, obviously, and I've learned so much in the last decade. And there's a lot of lawyers out there who would love to do this work. There's advocates who'd love to do it. And I don't know. Let's see. How much time do we both have? How much bandwidth do we have? I feel like...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because we discussed this a bit in the Amanda Lewis case, mm-hmm. which is that most jurisdictions either have you can bring a petition for writ of actual innocence,
right,
claiming new evidence. Or in a state like Florida, even after you've exhausted all your appeals, if you discover new evidence, there's a 2-year statute of limitations. And so we're claiming some of the evidence in the Amanda Lewis case is newly discovered, and that resets the clock and the ability to appeal. And so there usually is an option out there. Mm-hmm. It's not always an easy option, but there's usually an option you can find.
Yeah. A lot of it, though, is tied to the thing that a lot of like law firms and even innocence projects don't have the resource for, which is really deep investigation and investigating things over and over again. The Dennis Perry episode that folks will hear early next year, we had on Josh Sharp, and he talked about how he would look at a set of documents, whatever, then look at them again, then look at them again, then look. And that's what it takes sometimes. Like you have different sets of eyes, or you have to revisit the evidence over and over to be able to find that one thing that you missed. And that's the kind of time and energy that a lot of folks, like a lot of institutions, actually don't have the capacity for, unfortunately. But there's always independent advocates and family members who might, you never know. But anyway,
yeah.
So what we're going to do for this year finale, and you'll, it's been great to be able to relaunch Undisclosed and come back in 2025. Colin and I have cases lined up. I was just saying to somebody today that if we didn't take another case, we probably still have, like, if we just said no to every other case that came to us, we probably still would have a line of cases that would take us out 5 years from now. I mean, I feel like we have a lot of cases. People have sent up so many requests. So I'm grateful to be back to be able to do this work. And what we're going to be, we're going to have a little bit of a change next year, which I'm excited about. And that is this, you know, you guys know that we do our seasons, which are the investigations. Colin just wrapped up Amanda Lewis. I am working right now on currently investigating the season that I'll be producing for the late spring. And in between the seasons, we're doing these kind of weekly episodes with, you know, kind of like having different cases we talk about, having different folks on. But starting next year in January, when we come back, we're going to be going back to our twice a week episodes, which we used to do back in the day.
Yeah.
The addendum.
And so we used to, yeah, back in the old school days, we would have our full series and then a second episode per week, which started as, you know, like 5 minutes, answer some listener questions, and it kind of ballooned. But now, Robbie, we've kind of, I guess, reinvented the wheel a bit in terms of how these second episodes are.
Yeah. And you know, when we say back in the day, we're talking about back in the day when we were doing back-to-back cases, back-to-back investigative series, like all year round. I don't know how we survived. Well, we had other jobs, but we did it. We did it. And then we had people on like John Cryer and, you know, and others to host the addendum, and it became a thing. Now, because we're only doing two seasons a year, I say only as if it's not a lot. It is quite a bit of work anyways. We will be doing the same kind of addendum for those seasons. But in the interim, when we're doing just like our weekly episodes, what we decided to do for those second episodes, which will be dropping probably on Thursdays, like as they used to, is kind of talking about kind of what's happening in the news, basically, with true crime and cases that we're interested in talking about. And I'm also excited because we're going to have our executive producer, who's been with us for a decade, Mithil Thalhan, finally join us on the mic and also share that stuff. So, you know, if there's stories you want us to talk about, tag us on social media, post it in the community Facebook group. Let us know what you want us to discuss. There's always true crime stuff I want to talk about that's in the news. And I'm like, where do I talk about it? Well, we're going to be talking about it every week on Undisclosed now. So I'm excited about that. All right. So for the year end wrap up, we actually are going to be revisiting two of the cases that, you know, we've covered in the past and have some updates. And we, Colin, you and I both got to speak to the attorneys working on these cases. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce, first of all, the conversation you had and introduce the case that you're going to be kind of updating our listeners on.
Yeah. And so as listeners might recall, we did an update episode a few months ago. Pam Lanier and her husband, Doran, were turkey farmers in eastern North Carolina, and Pam was convicted of the murder of Doran. The theory by the state was that she had given him lethal doses of arsenic that caused him to pass away. And as you heard in our initial reporting, we spoke to a whole variety of experts, all saying that Doran's self-ingestion of this turkey medication that was later recalled due to arsenic content fully explains the levels of arsenic in his system. And so after years and years of waiting, finally in late September of 2025, there was a hearing on Pam's motion for appropriate relief. It was a full week-long hearing, and the state had some experts, the defense had a number of experts, again, who you heard from, first and undisclosed. And so I was able to speak to Mark Rabble at Wake Forest, the Innocence Clinic there, and two of the other members of Pam's legal team. And so what you'll hear here is my conversation with Pam's legal team about how that hearing went.
All right, let's take a listen. I know I am not the only one who, well into my adult years, did things like avoid getting the healthcare I needed because it was just too complicated. It's not that I didn't want the help, but there were so many times I just felt overwhelmed by the system, with the fine print, endless calls, confusion about what's covered and not covered. And that's why I love Roe. Roe is a leading online telehealth platform that connects patients with U.S. licensed doctors for discreet, convenient, and affordable healthcare. They've got treatments for weight management like GLP-1s, sexual health, hair loss, fertility, skincare, and it's all coordinated through their app with online visits, medication delivery, and ongoing support. And best of all, they have their own insurance checker, which lets you know if you are covered for any of their treatments, including GLP-1s, for free. All you have to do is just submit your insurance card and Roe will take care of the rest. There's no paperwork. There's no hassle. There's no waiting on hold. Roe's free insurance checker will send you a comprehensive report of all of your coverage details so you can make a decision that's right for your goals. And if you worry that you might not qualify for some of their treatments, well, nearly half of all Roe members actually have insurance coverage. I love the convenience of Roe, and while I have been using it to get access to hair and skin treatments, I have actually referred a number of friends and family members who are seeking specifically GLP-1 treatments to check out whether or not they can get coverage from their insurance. And a number of them have. And for those who decided to move forward, the great thing was that Roe then helped them to understand if GLP-1s like Ozempic and Wegovy were actually right for them and their goals. And then that's just the beginning. That's because when you become a Roe member, you get support throughout the process and you get access to your provider on demand for any questions. That's why over 500,000 people have trusted Roe to check their coverage for free. And you can too now. First of all, check out Roe at ro.co to see all of the things they offer. And then you can go to ro.co/justice for your free insurance check. Once again, that's ro.co/justice to see if your insurance covers GLP-1s for free. Go to ro.co/safety for boxed warning and full safety information about GLP-1 medications.
I'm here today with Mark Rabble, Andrew Chamberlain, and Emily Thornton. They're all part of the legal team for Pam Lanier. And let me just start by asking to remind our listeners, what is the basis for Pam's current motion for appropriate relief?
Sure. Yeah, this is Mark. I'll give the overall. Basically, since the time of this case, which was tried in 2001, there's new scientific evidence that explains how Pam's husband, Dorn, at the time, accidentally killed himself by drinking this water meant for his turkeys that contained a chemical called 3-nitro. He drank it as a remedy for whatever ailed him, from hangovers to an injury that he suffered in the fall of 1997 when he died. And he was seen by a number of witnesses drinking from the hose connected to the turkey medicator. And at the time, Pam's lawyers worked for several years to try to explain how her husband's drinking that water could have killed him. And none of the experts that they hired to help in the case, and also the doctors who performed the autopsy, were unable to really provide any helpful information. So it just kind of went unexplained by well, there was no experts to help her out at the 2001 trial. And so they relied on the fact that she had an earlier husband who drowned 7 or 8 years before this husband, and used that under this crazy theory of the doctrine of chances to say that what are the chances that this lady is going to lose two husbands? And which was insane, because both of her marriages were, by all accounts, really loving, good relationships, and these guys just died accidentally, not by anything that Pam did. So, in other words, the science finally caught up with what actually happened, and is now the scientists can explain how Dorn Lanier died. And so we were presenting a lot of expert testimony at this hearing a few weeks ago, and waiting for the judge to rule on that.
Yeah, and so if you look to that hearing, then as you said, a number of experts testified on Pam's behalf. The state has some of its own experts. And so, from anyone on the team, if you could give your thoughts and feelings about how that hearing went, how long it was, and what the experts tended to say.
I'm gonna let Andrew talk about the science because he handled. He's our lawyer who specializes in science. So I'm gonna let him explain that. But basically, in the last week of September, we had a 3-day hearing in front of a special Superior Court judge brought in to hear the case, Judge Shirley from Raleigh, and all of our impressions were that he read everything and listened very carefully to the evidence. And it was an unusual hearing because everybody in the hearing was an expert. There were two attorneys that testified, and then a scientist and two physicians. And I think I would prefer to let Andrew Chamberlain describe to you what all the new science was and why we believe it matters.
Hi, this is Andrew. So on behalf of Pam Lanier, we presented three scientists and a doctor. One of those scientists was an exposure scientist who is expert in the concept of exposure science, meaning what is the human health effect when we expose people to various compounds over time. His name was Dr. Keith Nachman. We also had Dr. Aaron Barchowski, who was one of the leading experts in the world on arsenic poisoning. We also had Dr. Corin Leffler, who is a toxicologist from ECU. And finally, we had Dr. Kat Roberts, who is a former medical examiner. Our experts explained that in 2001, there was no scientific evidence that allowed anyone to assess whether a particular quantity of 3-nitro could result in a toxic exposure to a person. It was known that 3-nitro contained organic arsenic and that the compound could be toxic to animals in certain doses, but it was not known the degree to which it might be toxic to humans. As a result, at trial, even though there were five witnesses who testified that Mr. Lanier routinely drank water mixed with 3-nitro, the defense didn't have the ability to present evidence that that water in those concentrations was adequate to kill Mr. Lanier. And Pam was convicted. With our new experts at the hearing that was conducted recently, we presented evidence that there has been a substantial expansion in the scientific knowledge related to the toxicity of 3-nitro as it relates to humans. And we demonstrated that 3-nitro had been withdrawn from the market by its manufacturer and that the FDA had removed approval for the marketing of this medication subsequent to the trial of Miss Lanier. The state presented two toxicologists and a medical examiner, and the gist of their testimony was somewhat in conflict. First, they offered two alternative arguments. The first argument they made was that there was some information about the toxicity of 3-nitro back in 2001, and that although all that toxicity information related to animal toxicity, the state's position was that the defense should have been able to extrapolate from that evidence to make a presentation. As a result, they essentially blamed the defense for not coming forward with extrapolated scientific evidence in support of Miss Lanier. Alternatively, they acknowledged the new science identified by Dr. Nachman and Dr. Barchowski They argued that that information isn't material because they believe that information related primarily to chronic exposures to 3-nitro. And they offered the theory that Mr. Lanier died from an acute exposure to arsenic. That was problematic in two respects. One is it essentially reveals a certain inconsistency. That inconsistency is they want to claim that Ms. Lanier's experts should have extrapolated from less data in 2001, and yet they criticize her 2025 experts from extrapolating for more data. Lastly, the argument that they shouldn't have extrapolated from 2025 data sort of exposes them to the point that they first have to concede that 3-nitro is capable of killing a person. And we contend that that in and of itself is new evidence.
Right. And so at the end of this hearing, there's a number of factors that Pam needs to prove on her motion for appropriate relief to get that relief. And the judge asked for additional briefing on two issues. And so what are the two issues that the judge asked for briefing on?
Right. So there's a 7-part test to prove newly discovered evidence in North Carolina. And they go through everything from, is there new evidence? Is it true? Does it matter? Is it material? Was due diligence used to discover it at the time? Is it just cumulative, corroborative, or repetitive? Does it just impeach or contradict something at the time? And then lastly, is sort of the so what question of, would there be a probability of a different result with this new evidence at a new trial? And at the end of the hearing, it was interesting. The judge really didn't want to hear closing arguments. He just wanted to zero in on two of those issues. First, you know, he said he would welcome briefs on why is this newly discovered evidence, and which is the first element. And then the seventh element, which I would call the materiality element, you know, how would this make a difference in a new trial? So it was interesting, pretty focused. And so we filed a fairly long brief, nearly 80 pages long, just addressing those two issues because this was our chance. And we wanted to make sure the judge, you know, had an understanding of all that.
And if the judge grants Pam's motion for appropriate relief, what does that mean for Pam?
Normally, if you win a motion for appropriate relief like this, the remedy is a new trial. And then so it would be back in the hands of the state. And I don't know if it would go back to the local district attorney or to the attorney general's office, which prosecuted this case originally. But somebody would then have to make a decision. Do they actually have a retrial? Now, the state, in the limited sort of circumstances here, does have a right to appeal any questions of law on a newly discovered evidence claim, which is a limited right to appeal. They could also petition for further review, but we also have rights to petition for review. We don't have a right to direct appeal, but, you know, that would bring in various other claims that we may. Right now, this is just limited to newly discovered evidence.
Got it. Any sense of a timetable for the judge's decision, or is that something that could take a couple months or could take up to a year?
You know, there's not a statutory time limit. I've seen judges take a year. I've seen them take less. I've seen them rule on the spot. Obviously, this judge did not rule on the spot because he wanted to read the transcript. So he asked for us to provide that, and we did on the last day of the hearing. We provided him a couple thousand pages of the jury trial testimony so that he could read that, because he has to compare that now to the new evidence. So he'll read all the witnesses and all the closing arguments and jury instructions from the 2001 trial. So, you know, that'll take a little time. And then he just got these briefs from both sides late Friday. And I know he had, at the end of the hearing, he was talking about some other cases he had going on and a trip in November. So I would estimate the soonest we could hear, and hopefully we would hear by Christmas, but it's hard to say.
Got it. And then final question is, how is Pam doing and feeling through all of this?
I have spoken to her twice on the phone since the hearing, and she's actually doing really well. I think we may have spoken about her health condition, and the last time we spoke, Colin, you know, she's had a lot of health issues, heart issues, congestive heart failure, several hospitalizations. But I think this was like reinvigorating to her to actually have her evidence put forward, her case put forward, and people speaking on her behalf. She had maybe a dozen family people there for the throughout this hearing recently. And it just, what she told me just a couple of days ago was that her doctor is increasing the strength of her medication because she sounded so much better. So this is good.
Excellent. Any final thoughts by anyone about the hearing or the aftermath?
What do you have to say, Emily? You saw the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say now, and you never know what a judge would do, but everything seemed to go as well as it could. Our experts were excellent and really explained things well. I don't think the state made maybe as helpful of points as they had hoped to, and Pam was very happy with everything. I know she was very excited to finally get this hearing going since things have been pending for so many years.
Right.
And, you know, I sat with her during the hearing and she was just so happy to finally have some of this information come out and you listen to.
Great. Well, thanks so much for everyone for taking part in this call and all your hard work on Pam's case. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate your attention.
All right. Great. Well, thanks so much.
This holiday season, you can go down in history by being the absolute best gift giver in your family and friend circle, and you don't even have to leave your house to do it. And that is all thanks to the Aura Frame, which will make you come across like not only do you know how to give the best personal gift, but also that you have been planning it forever. Aura Frames were named the number one digital picture frame by Wirecutter, The Strategist, Wired, and PC Mag. They've been recommended by Good Morning America, The Today Show, Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and three times Oprah Winfrey named them as one of her favorite things. You can set up the entire frame using an app. It takes 2 minutes. The Aura Frame is private and secure. You have complete control over who has access to the frame. And the Aura app lets you share pictures more securely than with email, which many other digital frames actually require. You can even upload videos up to 30 seconds long, and your favorite live iPhone photos will actually play right on the frame. There's even an embedded speaker that can play audio on demand. Folks can react with cute emojis to show that you love a picture, send congratulations, and more. The Aura Frame allows you to upload unlimited photos and videos. You can preload photos before it ships. You can personalize your gift and add a message before it even arrives to your giftee. And it comes with a gift box included. Every single frame comes packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag. Now, you guys have probably heard me talk about the fact that I gifted my father an Aura Frame many years ago. He cherished it his entire life. And I'm about to prepare one for my middle child because she's going off to college in 6 months. And I'm going to take these next 6 months and make sure that I have uploaded all 18 years of memories for her to take with her. Because even though I can't wrap togetherness, I can frame it. Now, for a limited time, you can save on the perfect gift by visiting Aura Frames to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Mat Frames. They're named number one by Wirecutter by using promo code JUSTICE at checkout. That's AURAFrames.com, promo code JUSTICE. This deal is exclusive to listeners and the frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get it in time for the holidays and support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, and so as you heard, the team was very positive about what happened at the hearing. I worked with the team in terms of briefing those two issues they mentioned to the judge, and we're not sure exactly of the timeline. You never know how these things go, but again, in terms of expectations versus what happened at the hearing, everyone thinks things went as well as we could expect, and so we're very hopeful that after decades of wrongful conviction, Pam might finally feel freedom for the first time.
How is Pam doing, by the way? Are you in touch with Pam?
I haven't spoken to her since the hearing. In my conversation with Mark Rabble regarding the hearing, he said she was in good spirits. She felt the hearing went well. Her health is, well, touch and go, holding up. And so this is the most positive that he's seen her in years. And so she's very hopeful that some relief is going to come out of this.
All right. Well, fingers crossed and prayers up. For Pam and also for our next defendant. And this is the Greg Lance case. And Greg's case, it was one of the last seasons that we did before we went on hiatus. And just to refresh our listeners' memory, Greg was convicted of the murder of a couple, the Kolesnikovs, who were a Ukrainian couple that lived in Putnam County, Tennessee. They had been murdered in their own bedroom. They had been shot. Their house was set on fire. And so much happened, you know, after we aired that series. We did find new evidence during investigating the series. And even while we were reporting it, this stuff kept dripping in. And then afterwards, many, many witnesses came forward, and those witnesses were presented at a hearing last year. But he was denied a new trial. So Greg's legal team at Bassbury Sims, and they've been representing him pro bono since they came on board, you know, appealed that denial. And they had a hearing just this past October, I believe. And so I got a chance to speak to Margaret Dodson, who briefed the court on the merits of on the appeal. And so let's take a listen. I'm excited to welcome Margaret Dodson to our year finale for this year. And Margaret represents Greg Lance, and she's with the firm Bassbury Sims out of Tennessee, right?
That's right.
Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Rabia.
I got to watch you in action a couple of weeks ago as you did oral arguments in the ongoing appeal in Greg's case. But, you know, we've been updating folks on the case as it goes on. But, you know, like time lapses, and we have so many other cases. And when was the hearing that I attended? That was the summer of 2020.
July 2nd, 2024. Yeah.
2024. Okay. So it's been like a year and a half since that hearing. Mm-hmm. And so can you take us back to that? Tell us about that hearing and where, because what just happened is connected to what happened at the hearing, right?
That's right. Yeah. So July 2nd was a really big day for us. We had been working on putting together what's called our petition for Iura Coram Nobis, which is basically the way that, you know, incarcerated people in Tennessee can bring forward newly discovered evidence that may have impacted the verdict at trial and present that to a court. And try and get a new trial, their conviction overturned, and a new trial. So as part of our petition, we had proof and new evidence from a man named Tim Horn, who's Sam Horn's biological son, who Sam Horn had confessed to him about, you know, his role in these murders, his responsibility for these murders. A man named Derek Helms, who Sam Horn had also confessed to. A man named Darren Dunn, who had been incarcerated with Mike Horn, and who Mike Horn had told over and over again about how he disposed of the murder weapon at Sam Horn's request. We had a new witness named Keith Pinson, who testified that he didn't remember finding this shirt or blouse that's been the subject of some discussion at the crime scene, but submitted it to the police department that was his signature, and he wouldn't have signed it way back then in 27 years ago, unless it weren't true. And DNA evidence that another male's DNA was on the murder weapon and not Greg Lance's. So we brought all of that evidence forward at a hearing. Our witnesses testified as to these confessions, as to, you know, their experiences. And we're so grateful for them, for their participation and their willingness to come forward. So
that's five new witnesses who presented testimony that has never been presented before in a court of law. Right.
That's right. That's right. And, yeah. So it was a lot to say, but that's because it's a lot of new evidence. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of new evidence. And it's all very consistent with one another. Like, you know, their testimony is very consistent with each other. None of them are contradicting each other. And what's important is that none of them knew Greg Lance at all. Yeah.
Right.
You guys might remember that, you know, after we aired our season, the Sundance Channel did one episode on this case, and then that prompted Tim Horn to come forward. Tim is Sam Horn's biological son from his first marriage. And he approached Greg's attorneys and said, wait, hold on a second. Like, I didn't realize that somebody was serving time for this crime. He didn't know all these years. But also that my father had, like, he rolled up to his father's house as the Kolesnikov's house, the victim's house, was still, like, smoking from the fire. But I want to talk a little bit about the DNA evidence that was presented. You said that you presented to the court evidence that somebody else's DNA was present on the murder weapon. Where on the murder weapon was it?
So the murder weapon was swabbed, the grips and the trigger were swabbed. And so, you know, we worked with Catherine Cross and also with Bodie, and Catherine's a fantastic forensic scientist. And so she sort of advised us on where you were most likely to be able to recover DNA, even after all these years, and sort of where you were most likely to get DNA that wasn't contaminated, because the weapon had been handled. It hadn't been kept sort of safely or under any sort of protocols at the Putnam County Sheriff's Office. So she advised us that that was sort of where you would be most likely to be able to recover DNA, and DNA was recovered. It was a mixture at both locations. And Greg was able to be excluded at both locations.
What about the flashlight? Because there was a flashlight strapped to the gun. And, you know, I've always, the flashlight had batteries. Somebody's loaded those batteries. Somebody's handled. And, you know, these flashlights have grips. I mean, most flashlights have some kind of, like, you know, it's not a completely smooth surface. And if I remember from the photograph, this flashlight was similar. So do you guys also swab the flashlight or the batteries or anything?
So I don't think that we swabbed the flashlight. We did rerun the prints. So there were two prints recovered on the batteries in the flashlight. We did rerun those prints through the APHIS system, which is sort of the system that, you know, houses all of the fingerprints, and didn't receive a hit on any of those. Of course, those include Greg, though he was excluded from the fingerprints at trial as well. So we did also attempt to sort of see if there were any new matches on the fingerprints that came from the flashlight.
And Sam Horn, who had lots of run-ins with the law, actually, his prints do not exist, like, in the system. He was never arrested for anything. He wasn't printed. His DNA doesn't exist in CODIS, I believe. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's the complication, is what do you match it to? I was at that hearing, and I thought it went extraordinarily well, but the judge ended up disappointing us all. Can you tell us how he ruled?
Yeah, so we got an opinion on Halloween, and I just, like, that is one of those things that's just, like, imprinted on me forever, and it has been really hard to get right, I guess, after that opinion. We got an opinion that denied us on a couple of grounds. So first, I think 5 or 6 days before our hearing, the Tennessee Supreme Court issued a new opinion in another Eric Kornhauer's case, that it goes by the name of Clardy, where it changed the standard for equitable tolling in Tennessee. So in Tennessee, you can present this new quorum nobis evidence, but the statute requires that you present it within a year, essentially, of your conviction becoming final. And obviously, most of the time, folks are not discovering that evidence right within that time frame. And so our courts allow for equitable tolling, which is essentially a due process consideration as to whether the statute of limitations should be told, essentially, such that it doesn't, you know, count against you, that you haven't discovered that information for some period of time.
Yeah. So is the standard that it was discoverable within that year or not?
So the standard now for equitable tolling is that you have to have this newly discovered evidence that essentially you have to bring it forward within a year of discovering it, which is sort of how they parse that. But it also requires that the evidence, even taken as true, so the court has to take it as true, shows actual innocence. So that's the only way that you're going to be able to actually, you know, get past the sort of tolling requirement. And the quorum nobis court in our case held that even though we have these five new witnesses and he has to assume the veracity of what is in our petition, that it did not establish actual innocence. Obviously, we disagree with that. If Greg didn't kill the Kolesnikovs because you assume the veracity of all these confessions, then he is not necessarily innocent. And so that was the first ruling from the quorum nobis court. The second ruling was the judge went on to rule on the merits, saying even if you find for equitable tolling, the merits do not establish that Greg is entitled to relief. And he did a couple of things there. One, first of all, he applied the wrong standard in making that determination. He also made adverse credibility determinations against our witnesses, against Tim Horn, Derek Combs, Darren Dunn, despite the fact that they're all telling the same story and had no reason to testify.
No incentive, right?
No incentive to testify and do anything but tell the truth. So it was a pretty gutting opinion to get. And, you know, to be as invested in this case and sort of to believe as an advocate that if you give someone good representation, that, you know, our courts will get it right. But obviously, we're continuing the fight on appeal. And that's the argument that we just had on November 12th. And so I think it went, I mean, the briefing was exceptional. I think our team did a fantastic job and we put all that we could into argument.
This is the busiest season for online shopping, given that the holidays are in full swing, but you're not the only one online, because the Grinches are also out there trying to steal your data and personal information. This season, hackers and data brokers are also putting in overtime, but there's a simple and easy way to protect your data and sensitive information, and that is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that hides your IP address and reroutes 100% of your online activity through secure, encrypted servers. Their best-in-class encryption ensures that your online activity remains invisible to data brokers, and it keeps hackers from getting a hold of your sensitive financial data. Even on unsecured public Wi-Fi, it is a digital fortress that'll keep even Santa's spy network out of your business. Right now, ExpressVPN is offering three different plans, allowing you to customize your VPN experience. Do you just want the VPN that's rated number one by the experts at The Verge and CNET? No problem. ExpressVPN's basic plan starts as low as $3.49 a month. Protect your online data for cheap so you can spend your money on gifts and eggnog. Not only do I use ExpressVPN to protect my data, I make sure my kids use it as well. Kids are online all the time, and believe me, they're using our credit cards to shop, so I gotta make sure our financial data stays safe and my family stays safe. And for less than $3.50 a month, well, it's a no-brainer. So if you want to get ExpressVPN at its lowest price ever, plus 4 extra months of service, go to expressvpn.com/towardjustice. That's a price as low as $3.49 a month, plus 4 extra months of service by going to expressvpn.com/towardjustice. Can you talk about the issues you raised and also specifically talk about the standard the judge applied versus what he should have applied?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a lot to tackle, you know, in our appellate briefing because of sort of the number of errors, I think, that the quorum nobis court committed. We obviously have challenged this sort of equitable tolling issue and, yeah, and have just argued, right, like, I don't understand how any definition of actual innocence we don't satisfy, right, if you take all of this as true. So sort of that's one piece of it. The second piece is the merits determination. And what the court did in its merits determination, the lower court, is it sort of took individual pieces of evidence. So, for instance, it took this evidence about, you know, our witness Keith Pinson finding this blouse at the crime scene, mm-hmm, and said individually in a vacuum, that evidence does not establish actual innocence. Mm-hmm. Actual innocence is not the standard for quorum nobis relief on the merits. The standard is whether or not the new evidence may have resulted in a different outcome at trial. And that's reversible error if the lower court applies the wrong standard. That's right. Sort of the textbook.
This feels very basic, like a very obvious error. How does a court make an error like this? I mean, like, I don't know if you have experience with this judge, if you've seen other, is this kind of part of a pattern? Is he just not very good at his job? Like, what, how does something so basic as knowing what standard to apply, how does this happen?
That is why we have appellate review, certainly, and we hope that the appellate court gets it right. I mean, it has reversed quorum nobis courts for doing this before, and okay, so that's part of our argument on appeal, is is one, you know, you applied the wrong standard, so that is reversible error. And two, if you look at what the court did credit, so obviously we take a lot of issue with the Quorum Nobis Court's credibility determinations and discrediting, you know, Sam Horn's own son in testifying when...
Our listeners why the court discredited Tim?
Yeah, and the opinion says that he did not find Tim credible based on his past drug convictions, which, you know, all of the state's witnesses at trial were also...
Oh, my God, yes, thank you.
And you know, again, when you're dealing with someone like Sam Horn, right, I mean, that's just going to be...
His orbit.
That is, I mean, yeah. That is part of, you know, his circle. And then he also took issue with part of Tim's testimony that Tim testified at one point that Sam Horn was feeling remorseful during his second confession because someone else was being charged. And the court said that at that time, no one had been charged. And so
I didn't realize this detail.
Yeah, they discredited his entire confession. But interestingly, Tim Horn later in his testimony cleaned up that portion of his testimony multiple times and said, I'm not actually sure someone was being charged. I just know that someone was being looked at. So
from day one of the investigation,
Yeah.
And Sam Horn knew this. Sam knew this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was, that was the stated reason. It does not seem like a justifiable reason
right.
under the law.
And all these years later, right? All these years later, memories are a little bit, yeah. But it's just, right. it's just a small detail.
To discredit his son's entire multiple murder confessions by his father. So, yeah. But the part that the court did credit is there's a portion of Darren Dunn's testimony where he talks about Mike Horn confessing to him that he removed the murder weapon at Sam Horn's direction and threw it out the window right where it was later recovered. And the court said that testimony was corroborated by evidence in the record, the physical evidence of where the gun was found. And right. so it credited that testimony. And as part of that testimony, there's actually, so the court says it credits the story about the removal and disposal of the gun. And as part of that story, there's testimony from Darren Dunn that he says Mike Horn removed the gun because Sam Horn killed his neighbors. So there's right. actual murder confession in that story, yeah. Which, you know, our argument then at a fresh look from the appellate court, even if you credit the credibility determinations, which we don't think is appropriate, but even if you do, there's plenty of evidence that the Quorum Nobis court credited that under Tennessee law should result in Greg getting a new trial. So that's our hope. That's our argument. And we're hopeful that our appellate court gets it right.
One part of the state's response just set my blood on fire, I'll be honest. And that's when the attorney said, well, Greg's been saying this all along. You know, the defendant's been saying the Horns did it all along. Yeah. I mean, that should not be held against Greg. And what makes me really angry about that is that if Greg Lance had never brought up these alternate suspects, it would have been like, well, all this time he never brought them up, and suddenly, right, like, because it's almost like he's we've seen this in other cases where the state makes it out like the defendant is concocting suspects out of thin air, whereas when he's been consistent with, look, this is like a clear, I mean, there's so many investigative leads that road takes you to the Horns that were just dropped for whatever reason, that is something that they're using against him. That really upset me. I was like, crazy. Well, let me ask you this. You guys can also watch it. We actually did post a YouTube video on our Facebook group, but if you're not, you can just go to YouTube and look for Greg Lance Oral Arguments. And I think that's how I found it. So you can watch the video. It's short. It's like 30 minutes, I think.
That's right.
What is kind of the timeline now? What do you expect?
It's hard to know. You know, I think we could get a decision quickly, or it could be 6 months or longer. So I'm glad so our petition or our appellate brief was fully briefed in like August or September. So we actually got a hearing pretty quickly. I was worried that we weren't going to get oral argument until next year. So I'm glad that we're already sort of that's done.
Yeah.
But now we just kind of have to wait.
And this is the intermediate appellate court. So there is still one higher court, right? So does that mean, like, if let's say they disagree with the lower court's decision and they grant relief, that the state can appeal it again?
The state can appeal. Yeah. It would depend on what the arguments were in terms of whether they would have an appeal as of right or whether the Tennessee Supreme Court would have to grant that permission to appeal.
Okay. I'm curious about, like, has I think Greg did file a federal habeas a long time ago, right?
He did. Yeah. I think there was a federal habeas from a long time ago. That's right.
But he would be entitled to file another one because of all this new evidence, correct?
I think that that's something that we're looking into. You know, there are some due process arguments that we're making. So, you know, one step at a time, but
incredible
evidence of innocence. So
I feel like in a federal court, it might be much more evident. I don't know. I always feel like a lot, there's so many cases I've seen that once they're taken out of the state court, it just feels like there's clearer eyes or something, clearer heads that prevail. But this is a process. This will take time. But so let's say the court rules in Greg's favor and the state does not appeal. What would that mean then?
Yeah. So technically the relief that you get on quorum nobis would be a new trial. So Greg would go from being convicted to being sort of in the pretrial procedures.
Right. Charged.
I cannot imagine that the state is actually going to retry on this evidence.
Right.
And so we would have to sort of, there would be a period where we would be talking to the state, I'm sure, about next steps. But I mean, that's my hope and prayer that we get to that position.
And I hope it's sooner rather than later. There have been so many times when Greg's had hope and then like last Halloween was a terrible Halloween for that reason. But I'm curious, does that county's DA's office, does it have a conviction integrity unit?
It does not. I was actually, today's Greg's 54th birthday. I was just talking to him this morning and he says hello to you, Rabia, and thank you for everything. And hello to everyone that eventually listens. But that's something we were actually talking about this morning is just, you know, how he really hopes that Putnam County follows some of the other counties in Tennessee and does that and sort of enacts that and has that sort of important unit and check on the integrity of convictions.
And there's no state level one either at the AG's office.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't believe so, no.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. You always have to think of every route possible to get to Rome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm also like, when's the next election out there?
I know. I don't remember. I do think that the DA was recently reelected. So
yeah, I think we have a few years on that. But this will drag on for a little bit. All right, Margaret, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and everything Bassbury Sims has done for Greg. You guys have taken this on pro bono. It just means so much. Greg, when he came to us, he was not represented. And I'm just so grateful that he is in such incredible, competent hands. And if there's ever a call to action you need from our end, you let us know. We've got listeners who are willing to do whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm so grateful and that this sort of publicity, right, and from Sundance too, led to Tim Horn coming forward. It led to us discovering so many different people from different investigative leads. So obviously, if anyone has anything that they know about this case and want to talk to us, please don't hesitate to reach out.
All right, Margaret, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Times are tough for a lot of people. And listen, I'm a single working mom, so I totally get it. We are always on the lookout for ways to save. But there are some recurring costs that you just cannot avoid, like your phone bill, right? But I'm not going to let big wireless and an overpriced phone bill suck the joy out of my life and out of the holidays this year. That's because right now, all of Mint Mobile's unlimited plans are 50% off. I can get 3, 6, or 12 months of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. It is their best deal of the year, and it makes it real easy for me to give my expensive wireless bill the boot. Mint Mobile's best deal of the year is happening right now. For $15 a month, you can get a 3, 6, or 12-month unlimited plan, and all the plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network. And you don't have to give up your phone number. You can bring your current phone number over to Mint. They have no contracts and no nonsense. I have saved hundreds of dollars since switching to Mint, and so can you. Turn your expensive wireless present into a huge wireless savings future by switching to Mint. Shop Mint unlimited plans at mintmobile.com/undisclosed. That's mintmobile.com/undisclosed. Limited time offer, upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for a 12-month plan required. That's $15 a month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra, initial plan term only. Less than 35 gigabyte may slow when network is busy. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com. All right. Just like in Pam's case, we don't have a real timeline, as Margaret said, but it is good that they got on the calendar for the hearing pretty quickly, which is good news. I feel like given, you know, all these new witnesses that have come forward, it feels almost impossible. Like, how could you not see what's obvious in front of you? But at the same time, we've all experienced the setbacks so many times in all these cases that I just feel like you just never know. Like, there's no predicting anymore. And Greg, you know, recently had another birthday, and whenever one of our defendants has a birthday, I just always feel bad wishing them happy birthday. How do you wish them a happy birthday when, like, they're still fighting these battles, but, you know, they're still living their lives? So we, of course, will update our listeners as we get rulings on these cases. And once again, fingers crossed. So there's always stuff happening in other cases, obviously, that we've worked on. Not all of it is ripe for sharing, however. So when there is information to share and there's movement in any of the cases that we've covered in the past, of course, we'll be back with that. But I think that's it for us at the end of 2025. I cannot believe it's the end of the year. And yeah, we'll be back, I think, maybe the second week of January. Mm-hmm. But we're going to be resting ourselves. Well, I'll be resting a bit. I'm going to be traveling overseas and enjoying myself. But Colin will, as always, be hard at work doing his legal magic. So, Colin, thank you for all that you do and for, I don't know, working with me on this stuff. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks to our listeners. It has now been over 10 years since our first episode, right? Our first episode, I think, was April 2015. We had a bit of a hiatus, but now we're sitting here in December 2025. So thank you so much to all of our loyal listeners for listening over the years, asking us great questions, helping us in many cases.
In so many ways, yeah.
With some of the evidence and the arguments and everything. And so you listeners are the heartbeat of the show, and we really appreciate all your continued listening over the years.
100%. And, you know, so many of our listeners back in the day, I remember when we first began, like, we would get these messages all the time that you're inspiring me to go to law school. A lot of sometimes it was young people who were in college who were like suddenly wanted to go to law school. Or sometimes there's people who were in full-time careers and were nurses or teachers and said, you know, I kind of want to go to law school, which makes me think 10 years later, they're out there somewhere practicing. They're there. They're out there doing the good work. But yes, thank you to our listeners. And I wish for all of you to have a happy and safe holidays and happy new year. You know, we'll see you in 2026.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/toward justice and answer 3 simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up, and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at Rabia2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at Evidence Prof on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.